CPS. Go. Inco. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound podcast, the only podcast where negative 10 is a number to be desired. I am Chris Jordan, your host, and I would like to welcome to the podcast today wordsmith Dave Julian, the poetic butcher out of Austin, Texas, part of Metaphorically Challenged, the show coming up this Friday, the 22nd, at Cherrywood Coffee House. How are you doing this evening, Dave?
Yes, sir. I will tell you one thing. It is David Julian Morris. But I'll tell you one thing, like on my business cards, the poetic butcher business cards, on the back it says government name classified. So if you don't watch this, if you don't listen to this podcast, you won't know my real name. Right. You may have guesses, but it won't be told again.
Well, thank you so much for sharing it, because I know what artist names mean. I myself play under the name No Disassemble. I do a lot of electronic music, and a moniker like that, like the Poetic Butcher, comes A, with a certain level of responsibility, and B, it's got to come with a story. How did the name the Poetic Butcher come to be? How did you come to embody that being?
Well, originally, I'm from New Orleans. The Hurricane Katrina, I wasn't in the city at this time, but Hurricane Katrina hit, and I was still living in New Orleans, so I had to move to Lexington, Kentucky, where my mom and my stepdad lived. So I worked at a Kroger marketplace. This is how I got the name. Worked at a Kroger, and it was a test store. So a test store means what happens here is going to happen at every Kroger in the USA. And I worked at a meat and seafood department. And they loved the way I interacted with customers. So they thought of the program, CSA, Customer Service Associate. And I did that. So you walk, talk with customers. They got kiosks, offer them recipe advice. And the way I got the name, I would do announcements on food, and people loved it. Didn't matter age, race, people loved it. And I was just talking about steaks or whatever. But a guy, Matt Chagnacki, he asked me one day, hey, next time you do an announcement, can I film it? And they put it on YouTube and called me the Poetic Butcher. And after that, I just said, of course, I kept doing announcements. That was my job. But after that, I said, let me see about poetry. I was never interested in poetry before, but since I had the name, I said, why not? And I went to the poetry scene, but there were two poetry events in Lexington, Kentucky per month. So, I thought it was
such a wide line.
I had that, man, bullshit.
It's hard as a poet to find things to do. There's slam poetry in pretty much every major city now, but to find an actual poetry night where people get up and share things other than slam poetry nights, those are not easy to come by.
They weren't even good though. I know, like you said, they weren't easy to come by, but these weren't even good. And this is how, even though we're talking about metaphorical challenge and the whole rising of the art community, again, Renaissance. But I'll get to that later. But it's like, this place was segregated in their poetry. So there were two events. One was majority black, one was majority white. And there was no crossover, meaning like if I go to one event, then later on in the month go to the other one, I'd never see the same faces. And my thought is if you like or love something and they're only two per month, you're going to be at both of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, there were, you know, white people at the majority black men, as well as there were black people at the men, but they weren't the same faces. And it wasn't, you know, that many people. I was like, so eventually I had the moves. I was like, I got to live because Lexington, Kentucky, it was nice, but sport, art, nothing. It was, what we say, rubbish.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I moved to Austin, Texas. I started doing the, like we were talking about, I started doing the slams because I've lived in Austin 5 years. And so I started doing slams. I did them for like 3 years. I would never win. I won one time. And okay, in the beginning of the slams there, because they every Tuesday. And so anyway, backtrack. While I moved there, there were so many more poetry events that I could do. And also probably 3, 4, maybe 5 a month. Well, no, not 5 a month, because that's every week. I would say 5 other than that per month. But so I did a slam, but I'll be like, after a while, after I got my footing in, I'm like, wait, I should be winning these. But I didn't, because I didn't have a formula. And, you know, although I like slam, it's mainly a form because it's getting judged. And so the people know what to look for. It's that what came first, chicken or the egg? And the poets know what to say. And it's usually political, maybe by race, maybe about sexual orientation, which is all fine, but it becomes monotonous after a while. So I read the writing on the wall. Then I thought of my own show where I would host, and I got different poets up there. I was just, at first, because I was starting, and it was a 3-hour show. So I was like, oh, I can't, you know, I need to not just have an open mic. I need to be sure I have people on the show. And so I got maybe 7 or 8 people, and they performed. Then there was, luckily, there was a nice audience. And so I got, you know, some people signed up, talk on stage. But so that's been running like 1.5 years. And yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying that aspect of Austin, Texas.
Yeah. And, you know, I specifically found whenever I moved here, you know, I always love hearing people's stories about how they came to Austin and what it's been like since they moved here. Because I myself, until I moved here, never enjoyed Austin. I'd been to Austin numerous times. Being from Houston, it was a city of obligation. Whenever friends from college would come into town to visit me, it'd be like, hey, let's go to Austin for the night. Because it was only 1.5 hours away. You know, that's a Texas minute.
Right, like, right.
Like, yeah, you can drive north to south in Houston and not leave the Houston city limit in 1 hour. So
especially if you drive 80.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it was a hard town for me to want to move to. Every time I came here, it was always surrounded with drama. It was always, let's go to 6th Street. Someone would get lost. Someone would get kicked out of the bar. We'd get a parking ticket, something. Later on in life, it was coming here for South by Southwest and running sound for events, running sound for bands that I worked with. And once again, someone from the band would get lost on 6th Street, or gear would get broken or stolen, or, you know, the band van would get towed. It was always some drama. But once I moved here and found the things other than 6th Street to do, it was like, oh, wow. This is a pretty hip town. There is quite the art. It's quite the art community. They are supportive of all types and strains of art. You know, it's really interesting the way that they foster artists in the city of Austin, and the way that there's a healthy competition between artists, but there's not necessarily the angst between bands or musicians that you see in some cities.
Right. No, it's that. Yeah, it's the different communities, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, I see all of them, whether it's rock or even a rap or, you know, just a visual art or people selling art or poets, which is my main thing. And my other thing, I say rappers, because I host a lot of their shows. I've only hosted one rock show. But so basically, I'm trying to get all these people together where I think a lot of poetry, it tries to, the elitist word is just a little bit too big, but it's in the same sentence or same definition. It's probably number three in the definition, but it's like a lot of poets talk over you, not maybe elitist, very close. But the way I speak to my audience or whatever I talk about, and usually I talk social commentary like manners or the overuse of cell phone or the non-social network, a whole bunch of them. I have one on homelessness bums. But anyway, I speak to, I do my poetry. It's a little bit more melody and take some thought. Of course, when I write, I have to sit down and think about it. So it's, you know, better allocated. But I still speak as I'm talking to you on the phone or as I would talk to someone walking down the street. You know, so I talk right to people. And also, I think, I hope, I can't speak for all of them, but just the way my perception, it seems that poets want, like the fans they want, or people that love poetry or other poets. Whereas I want everybody. You know, you don't have to have listened to poetry ever. But I think if you let me bring it to you, and hopefully the subject matter is what you like. That's why I try to, I have a vast array of different encapsulations that I choose. And sometimes they work for this audience, sometimes they don't. But it's also up to me to read the audience, you know. So I'd be like, oh, well, this poem, even though I think it's good, the vibe of this room or the feng shui of this room is really calling for cell therapy or it's calling for I am drugs. You know, you have to know your people. And also, the bigger you get, I believe, I understand you can't interact with them one-on-one anymore as the audience gets bigger. But as I said, the feng shui, you get that vibe and the people read it. There's always somebody not going to like it. But just for the most part, you get that vibe out there and you show them your charisma. And they're like, oh, okay. And also the confidence. Because what do they call it? Synergy. Like the book Self-Seeing Prophecy, where that person and I, we're talking. Or even like I said, once it gets bigger, that energy from that person to me, just that it makes a new one, the synergy.
Yeah.
Self-seeing prophecy?
Oh, most definitely. I am most familiar with the work.
I didn't like part two.
Yeah. But it's an interesting concept that you bring up. It's something that I myself have had issue with my electronic music. I have found very few people that I synergize with whenever I am creating it. Most of the time, people that I've had in the studio with me have been like, "Ooh, wow." Like, they definitely felt the intensity, but it was uncomfortable for them. They didn't really know what to make of it. And I remember distinctly the day that my musical partner for the band Shakuhachi Jones, Wesley Goins. The day that we made music the first time together, we both kind of like looked around and it was like, whoa, did you feel that like ripple through the room? Like,
hell,
and
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I did. And he was like, dude, that was cool. You think we could make that happen again?
You know?
And I was like, we could try. And that was the first time where it was like, oh man, I finally found someone like on wavelength. That gets what I'm trying to do. And it was amazing how fast the art started getting churned out. I want to say we wrote like 4 hours of music in 6 months, something like that. It was an insane amount of music to write.
And how did the bakery you guys feel?
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful. Even to this day, we were just, he lives in California now, and we were talking about kind of revamping things over Dropbox, like dropboxing tracks to each other to work on and stuff like that.
Oh, hell yeah.
And yeah. But it's interesting that you bring that up, though, because I worked with jam bands as an audio engineer for a long time. And they were mm-hmm. my favorite because of that synergistic aspect. Like you could see yeah. when everybody was clicked in together. How do you recognize that when you're behind the microphone and on stage, giving an impromptu performance as the Poetic Butcher? How do you recognize that hook has been hit, and that things can keep going like that you could keep generating something for a little while? Because it is kind of a surf aspect. There is kind of a wave mm-hmm. that you have to catch in order to keep things going. So how do you recognize that moment when you're behind the microphone?
I think like my show, Metaphorically Challenged, which I think I said I've done a little bit more than a year. I haven't seen it every show, but just some shows are just on key. It's like the weather, the stars and planets are landing, and the people are. Because as I say, what I've noticed from a lot of regulars that come to the show, they're much more open, and not just with me, just more open to people in general. And once you have that, it doesn't matter how much they're listening to me. I'm just here, like I just do my show for background. As I tell the other poets or the rappers or the comedians, I say, you know, I don't know who made this quote, but, he was like, I'm just here to get the audience used to looking at the stage. So that's all I do there. And if I can make them do that, then like you said, that's when the synergy hits the room. And I think the buildup of my show, I see it in spurts, but it's just got to keep that 100%. And it's tough, but it's possible.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you say you've been doing the show Metaphorically Challenged for a year now. How many shows a month do you do with it? And what was it that made you want to start the show and name it Metaphorically Challenged?
What made me want to start the show? Because the second question is very easy. But because as I said earlier, I was doing the slams, but because the slams are competition and you win money.
Yeah.
But you also, the further you go, because they're three rounds, the more people get to hear from you. And that's what I really wanted. But I would get out, like get cut the first round, maybe make it to the second. But I was like, even some of my bad stuff should have beat some of these people. But there, at times, it wasn't about poetry. It was about what's in your diary. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know? And also, it's about relating. Now, that's a key. And I believe we as humans, we relate just on the most primal level. And that doesn't mean we're primal, but on the most primal level. So I don't feel relating needs to be forced. Now, if there's the separation between the stage and the audience, then I think the beauty of the person on stage would not be just to relate, would be to be bigger, maybe bigger than life. Because me, if I'm a person in the audience, I don't want to see somebody on stage and say, oh, I probably could do that. I want to see some greatness, some grandeur.
Yeah, to see a little confidence.
Yes, sir. And the way I got the name Metaphorically Challenged, I don't even know. I'm just thinking, what name would stand out and be a good representation of me. And I wasn't, I think when I made the name, I wasn't positive about a brand. The Poet and Butcher, I wasn't either, but I did like the name. I'd be more protected of it. But the brand, metaphorical challenge, but then I had the book, which is not finished. Then I had the video, which is not finished. And both of those are metaphorical challenges too. I say, I don't know how it came up, but I just like one day, why don't I just name all of these things that? And UT, University of Texas, there's a film student, Roger May Buquin Sanchez, last year for her final, she did a documentary on me. She walked around sometimes, somebody performed a documentary on me. It's titled Metaphorically Challenged, The Legacy of the Poetic Butcher. So I guess I'm stuck with the name now. And I don't know where it came from, my brother.
And, you know, it's interesting the way that those moments of inspiration come and just stay there. And become a part of our life. You know, one of my favorite bands in the world is the band Rush. And they were like, you know, we're doomed to play Tom Sawyer every single night for the rest of our lives, but we're okay with that. Yeah. You know, like they only released like another 30 albums, you know, but there's one song that everybody wants to hear whenever they go to a Rush concert. Right. And of course it's Tom Sawyer. And they're like, you know, we will give that to you with pride every single night. And it's interesting to me how, those moments of inspiration, those small things that pop up, like you're saying, metaphorically challenged, just kind of came to you. And now it's kind of rolled into something where there's a book, there's a documentary, there's a music video, all that kind of stuff, where things have just kind of snowballed into something else. How has that affected your regular performance? Trying to get all of that together, because I know what it's like, number one, just to write an album or something like that. I know what it is to do my regular work on the road and still produce two podcasts, and run a podcast network, much less be writing a book, working on a documentary with somebody, putting on a show with regularity at Cherrywood Coffee House here in town, like what's coming up Friday the 22nd. How has the concept of being metaphorically challenged affected the performance of the Poetic Butcher?
I wouldn't even say it has, because I think everything I do, everything I do is something I've been planning for, and I wouldn't even say, I'll say planning for most of my life. I always keep, make sure people feel good, but I was always, you are supposed to be first, they second. Whereas they are first and you're second. You don't put people ahead of you, because I want the best for me, and I think if I have the best for me, then I'm going to give you the best. And vice versa, like we were saying, synergy. If we can all move in that direction, then beautiful, beautiful. But it doesn't affect me. It's like, as I said earlier, I've always been the same person. I think I'm much better structured now, but I've always been the same person and had that, whether some of these ideas have been suppressed or not, or whatever somebody would like the Kroger meat department, someone pulled it out of me, but I've always had it in me. So I think when I do the next show, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm doing a book. Or, oh, I'm doing a video. And video was done in Malibu, California. I went to visit a friend of mine, Lynn Warziniak, friend of mine, like, for 20 years. I met in New Orleans. And anyway, her fiance, who I met the last time I visited them a few years ago, his name was Chris Heller, and he's the senior editor for Conan O'Brien. And we went out. This is like the second to last day I was there. We went out, sushi, got sake. He played some music once we got back to their house. And he's like, oh, I just made this. What do you think? And so it was a more rapid beat. I was like, oh, look at Chris over here. Look at Lynn over there. That kind of, you know, a little freestyle rap. And he was like, oh, man, do you have anything that can go with a beat? I've been thinking one. And he did something. And I think the first part was done by him. But the rest, he just improvised and went, because the way, I guess it would metaphorically challenge the song or video, it wouldn't be really called a rap. I think that would be the first impression it gives the audience. But it's still my style, whereas the flow rapper really won't do. But he matched that up. So I'm saying instead of a boom, boom, pop, boom, 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 pop, boom, yeah. boom, pop, I would go boom, 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 pop, boom. You know, it's off.
Yeah.
And as you say, it was better for it to be challenged.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up your style, because it's definitely rap influenced, but it's not straight rap. It is very much more spoken word poetry style of presentation.
Yes, sir. It's like school. You know, some people go to for different jobs or careers. They go to school for that, and I guess poets or rappers, they don't, but they study that. They might look at someone, but it's like my study was just life. I didn't, you know, there were certain times, of course, certain years you're into music, certain years you're into just being a participant, or certain years you want to go to the bar, certain years you want to read more. But so I'm like, I push all of that into one instead of just the jack of all trades. I'll say that. There we go. The jack of all trades. And that's better for a challenge, but a more evolved jack of all trades, I guess, is metaphorically a challenge. And that's what I want, hopefully, from everyone and even the audience members. I just want that mindset. Not, you don't necessarily have to do everything to be metaphorically a challenge. But it's nice to have that mindset. You say, oh, well, I can be free. I can think this way. And that's all it's about, you know. People always say, oh, love this. You know, love, whatever. I'm just about harmony. All that love, all the rest of that stuff, that's coming. If you got harmony, which I guess in the conversation, love would be the primary. And harmony would be like a secondary, tertiary. But if you have the second, then it's, in my opinion, it's automatic that you have the first, you know?
Yeah.
I give it to them, man.
Well, and that's just it. You really do have to come at it from the point of doing what you want to do despite anybody else. We use this show a lot, use on this show a lot, the comparison between artist and musician. And the artist is someone that makes their music despite any money. They'll keep making music the way they make it for their entire life, and maybe they'll get discovered 10 years after they're gone. The musician is the person that's out, like, plying their trade week in, week out. People, like so many friends of mine who are out teaching music lessons, playing jazz one night, 80s another night, blues another night, you know, doing whatever they have to do to ply a trade. And they're both just as equal. They're both just as good.
Yeah.
But where do you, as the poetic butcher, draw the line for yourself? What percentage artist and what percentage musician would you say you are?
See, the musician thing is difficult. I know that's in me. So I guess that is one of the most difficult questions.
Thank you.
I'll say I embody all of them, And it's that hopefully it's that jack of trade mindset. It's like, I don't want any one of those to beat the other one in percentages, but sometimes I know certain people, certain rooms, certain shows require more of this one than the other one. So, you know, and sure. I'm not a singer, but, you know, you just got to read them.
Yeah. Yeah. And myself, I guess really the first art form that I found was poetry and music. That was was really the first thing that resonated with me personally, as far as I could take poetry and music anywhere with me, as long as I had a blank piece of paper or even my palm to write on and something to write with, I could write poetry, and I have volumes and volumes of it. I have not written in years, and it's strange for me to be trying to get back into the habit. How regularly do you write? And do you self-edit?
Oh, hell yeah. I think,
I'm sorry.
I wrote a new piece probably half a month ago, it stemmed from an introduction of a rap group called the Super Friends, and the introduction had no meat to it. It was just basically an introduction. I took the Superman theme and, you know, compared them to, like, Paul Kitt, able to leap tall, all that stuff. But I think the newer piece, some had some of those same elements, but I talked more about society. But it's still the metaphor would be superheroes, or that, I guess it would be, what it be called, a culture? Superhero culture? I don't know. Comic book culture, I guess. So I did that, but I write probably once a month, and I edit it because I usually want my pieces to be bigger than life. So sometimes I know, I'm going to say that, but I have to reword it. But like you say, it just comes to you. It's nothing I can push. It just happened. Like, so for instance, if you wake up normally 6 o'clock in the morning and you've done it 20 years, you probably don't need an alarm clock. That's how my poetry was, where it would come every month. I'd been so used to doing it that it would just come around the same time. Something would hit me.
Well, and, you know, for myself, as a poet, things like that, it's been strange for me, like I said, not to be able to, I guess, find a way to put pen to paper. I've started kind of lightly journaling when I've been on the road lately. And that's been nice to just kind of get back into the habit of flexing that muscle, because it is very much a muscle. Just like playing a guitar or anything like that. It takes time. It takes practice, to get used to doing things. And I guess you already answered how frequently you write everything else, but, what is your writing process? How do you go about putting words to paper whenever you do sit down to write?
I guess an example would help out better. So I did a piece that people still request, which is I Am Drugs. I wrote this, like I said, 3 years ago. When I moved here, I hadn't heard certain things, certain mannerisms I didn't see. And one of the things I didn't hear was a quote, like people would say, I don't do drugs, I am drugs. And that's the self-doubt quote. And So I hadn't heard that in a long time. But then it just so happened I heard it maybe 4 or 5 times in 1 week. And just somehow I just went home, just sat down and thought about that, and then wrote the piece, Iron Drugs. So I think most of my pieces come different ways. I also have done pieces where I forced them. And by that, I mean like, because I had a period where I wrote maybe 6 poems, and this wasn't every month. This was like, I wrote this 6 poems in like 1 week, which is rare for me. But all of them were on social commentary, but I chose different ways to present it. Like the animator was one, and that was television technology terminology. So that was my metaphor. Then I also had one on the animal kingdom. Then I had the ant form, but all of these just social commentary. And they were good, but they, as I said earlier about something else, they had no meat. They were all the same thing. Just I put a nice bow around them. So then I don't even know how I got out of that. Well, no, I know how I got out. The Salvador Dali quote just came up. And I was like, oh, interesting. And I wrote the drug piece, and that became a very, I will say it's my most requested. Yeah, I was about to say second, but it's my most requested piece to this day.
Would you mind performing it for us live on the air here?
No problem, but you got to remember, this is like 4 minutes long.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Let's see if I remember that. Okay. Some inanimate objects have the power to animate us, thus making them the animator. I have the power to reanimate those inanimate objects, thus making me the reanimator. You hear? Is it coming out good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hey, let me start it over because I like breaking them up because I got to get it to the flow. Well, all right, here we go. Some inanimate objects have the power to animate us, thus making them the animator. I have the power to reanimate those inanimate objects, thus making me the reanimator. So I'll quote legendary artist Salvador Dali, who once said, I don't do drugs, I am drugs. Exactly. Inject me. I'll take you. Remember that time you did lines of me off the table glass? Yeah? No? Well, let's take a deeper look through the looking glass. Look, free money. Somebody else's money, but it could be your money. Steal from me. Yeah. Now, buy more of me. Hey! Introduce me to your friends. Hey, pal, you like Superman? You want to be bulletproof? Well, introducing PCP. Any overdoses? She's comatose. I got to get new friends. Oh, I'm sorry. Reintroducing me, LSD, Molly, morphine. Codeine. I got many names. My name changes. My form changes. I can change you. What you want? A narcotic? A sedative? From 1885 to 1929, the additive in Coca-Cola was me. The additive in Coke was Coke. Things change. It's now caffeine. Feel me, but I can be gritty. I can be low down. I can be a shitty piece of crap. I can be math. Soon, 9 minutes left for you. But I still want you to take me high. Take me to the penthouse, playboy. I want to be flashy. Now I'm a designer drug. I'm an attractive nuisance. But this ain't real. Even how good I make you feel. But still, take a hit of me. Take the whole sheet, because I'm taking you down the rabbit hole. But you got choices. Red pill, blue pill. It's still a drug. It's still me. No such thing as drug abuse. Just everyday recreational drug use. And some fools think they can beat me so they can become a hero, so they can become heroin. That's too strong for you. Let's start small. Drink me. I'm at the bar. Drink a lot of me. You got them keys to the car? 420 reasons not to do it, but people still do it. So don't blame me, because I don't do drugs. I am drugs. That was written a few years ago, but yeah, that's, people still like that one, you know?
Yeah, see, beautifully said.
Thank you, my friend. Yeah, I try to put, like I said, I try to be over the top with it, you know. I'm still practicing on that one because I want all my I want my words, of course, to be great. I want them to respect my skin. But I also, after that's done, see, the performance and the pen don't interject. It's like some people like, well, if you have a good performance, that must mean you didn't write, your writing is not as good, or vice versa. I don't think people say that, but I think people think that. So, but my thing is like, okay, I'm not writing for the performance. I'm writing just to write. Then once I see what I have, the performance comes. Now, some of my pieces are not great performances, and that's cool. But some of them are, or have the potential to be great performances, like the I Am Drug. So I look at them and I work on them. And as I said, in certain audiences, you know, I may speed it up, I may do it a more funny way. And that piece and a lot of other pieces, I sometimes change up the words. And I don't think I've ever changed the drugs up, but I changed up some. No, I said something about Demerol one time. But anyway, I just you know, enjoy myself, and that's what I guess I want other people to do, enjoy themselves. And I know this is something I have a strength in, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this to the best of my ability. You know, whether it's 5 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, if I'm getting paid, if I'm not getting paid, I want to give a grand performance every single time. You know, if I'm sitting on the porch,
you want to do justice to your art and to other people's art.
Yes, sir. But also, I want other people, whether they artists or not, to know it's fine to always give 100%. You know, when you smell like you're in a conversation, people hold back too often on many things. Like, I noticed at a time in my art, I wouldn't, I guess, put the performance in on a lot of my pieces that I thought did deserve it. I would even know that, but I would do it just to be, I guess, in the crowd. But I was like, no, and this goes for every member of the crowd. I don't believe we all have that thing that can stand out of the crowd. I think we all have different levels of certain things, some more than others. And some people are blessed with 3... Anyway, I was getting so off track. But
that's all right.
No, I just the harmony. And like I say, you know, if I can give 100%, maybe this person can't do what I do, but they can give 100% of something they're good at. It's like, what did they say? Bruce Lee said, be kung fu. You know, when you're cooking, be kung fu. And on and on. I'm like, that's all I want to be poetry.
Well, and you know, I think that is probably one of the biggest issues that we have in our society to begin with is people finding an identity and a definition of themselves. I remember the day that I was, at the time, I was working a 40-hour a week job as a temp somewhere, and also mixing at a venue about five nights a week. And I was talking with someone that I'd talked with a few times, you know, just here and there. And we finally got to have a real conversation. He's like, "Oh, you know, what do you do?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm an audio engineer, but I work at IDEX during the day." And it was one of those moments where it was like, wow, I do not define myself by that 40-hour a week job.
No, I
define myself as something totally different. And that was very much my moment of live Kung Fu, where it was like, wow, it doesn't matter what I do during the day. This is how I define myself. This is what I am. And it took me years to get to the point where I was self-sufficient and all I did was audio, video, freelancing, doing things like that. But once I did, it'd be hard pressed for me to go back to a studio environment, even in broadcast or anything like that. I enjoy my freelance world and my freedoms way too much. And doing what you're doing with this is very much the same thing. It is a point of artistic expression and it's a point of fostering a community and a means of societal communication. That's one of things that we have lost in the world of lyric is the fact that songs are based off poetry. Poetry came first, music came second. But, well, music probably came first because it was more than likely just instrumental before we could ever speak as beings. But
that's true.
You know, the poetry, though, is very much our voice of society. And I think that we've lost that when it comes to lyric in music. And I love the fact that you are still trying to keep the true poetry spirit alive. Even though you were mixing poetry with music, you're still very much trying to keep that societal lens on things.
Yes, sir.
And thank you so much for joining us tonight, for sharing your journey as an artist, as moving from Dave into embodying the call that is being the poetic butcher, and into rolling down the hill with the soon to be freight train that is metaphorically challenged. Once again, everybody, make sure to go out this Friday, February 22nd. At what time?
Yes, sir. 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock.
7 to 10.
Sarah
over
will call me out.
And is there a cover or anything like that?
No cover. No.
Cover.
Metaphorically challenged 1 million.
And that's what's great about it, folks. That's how you know he's trying to foster a community, is that he is not charging a cover. There are numerous shows like this that charge a good $3-5 at the door to get in, what have you. The bar makes it. Maybe the promoter makes some of it. But the fact that you were doing this gratis for everybody, for people to go out and enjoy, thank you so much for keeping that poetic spirit alive. Tell everybody where they can go to check out the trailer for Metaphorically Challenged. And when is the book coming out?
I will say 2 months.
Okay.
Hopefully. But I will tell you one thing on the show, Metaphorical Challenge, this Friday at Cherrywood Coffee House. So what's on the bill, of course, me hosting, I have the poetry remix, as I said, some poets with a background. Then I have the open mic for open micers to come either talk on a microphone or just sit in an audience and enjoy themselves. Then I have some rappers, Big Mike, CWHK, Sound of the Underground, and Ill Cell. And where you can find that or contact me is on Facebook, The Poetic Butcher, on Facebook, Metaphorical Challenge, either page. The website also is coming soon. And one more thing, I'm selling Cadillacs. And Cadillacs are Egyptian cotton. The logo on front is TPB. That's how I'm affectionately known as, The Poetic Butcher. And right. I want y'all to come get you some nice Cadillac.
Most definitely. Stop on by. Check out his Facebook page, Metaphorically Challenged. Hop on by Cherrywood Coffee House this upcoming Friday, February 22nd from 7 to 10 p.m. to check out the Metaphorically Challenged show. Thank you so much once again for joining us. Once again, everybody,
yes,
The Poetic Butcher. While you are online checking out his work, please do stop on by the Talking Sound podcast. That is where you can check out all the episodes, all of the great information out there that we post from industry news, all of the great stuff. The live videos that we've done from Texas Association of Broadcasters, all the great shows from the HC Universal Network, like Dudes and Beer Podcast, Yes But Why, Scary Dad, Therapy Hour with Rusty Lozano, all of that is there. Go check it out, TalkingSoundPodcast.com. Remember, everybody, until next time, take care of your hearing, take care of yourselves, and keep reaching for a limit. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.